Before you listen to this podcast, you can subscribe to The Critic magazine with the current offer of 3 issues for just £5. Head to our website, www.thecritic.co.uk, to subscribe today.
Hello and welcome to The Critic podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today by Jonathan Isby and Caroline Fisk, where we're discussing what the point of Tory party conference is. Jonathan Isby has recently been appointed the director of the Politea think tank. He's previously worked at the BBC, The Telegraph, Conservative Home, Brexit Central. Have I missed any there, Jonathan?
Taxpayers Alliance.
Taxpayers Alliance, he was the head of. And Caroline Fisk has been a Conservative councillor twice for 8 years, and she's run a Conservative Party office, which was Hammersmith and Fulham. Welcome to you as well, Caroline. Caroline, if I could just start with you. You've been to a Conservative Party conference, is it 4 times?
Yes, yeah.
And you've been twice back in the old days.
Twice in the old days, where it was Blackpool and Bournemouth, and twice in a much sort of newer era, and I'll say more modern era, where it's been much more sort of corporate, in Manchester and Birmingham.
And what have you noticed? What's the difference between those two?
I think actually there's quite a stark difference. In Blackpool, everybody stayed in absolutely beaten up old bed and breakfasts. There was quite an atmosphere about that, actually crusty old bed and breakfasts where the towel rail sort of on your head. It actually meant you saw the local community, you went to local cafes, you went to local pubs maybe on your way home. Suddenly, I would say in, I'm slightly exaggerating to make a point, but in Manchester, I stayed in a very expensive hotel 1 minute from the conference centre. It was a bit like being on a Mark Warner holiday. I never left the compound. So, you know, I actually think quite a difference there. It's become quite corporate. In the past, it used to be very almost sort of faulty towers in its atmosphere in some ways.
So you think it's lost some of the charm?
It's lost some of the charm. And actually, I think it was fantastic for all those towns. And I'm sure maybe Jonathan knows what was the decision and why. We were in these, you know, old seaside towns. We were bringing a lot of money and a lot of life to them, you know, just for one weekend. I'm not sure why the decision was made to move away from those towns.
Jonathan, you might have a slightly different view on conference. Do you think it's lost its charm over the last few years?
Oh, there's no doubt that the atmosphere around it has changed over time. I mean, I've basically been going to party conferences of various political parties for 20 years, basically. I mean, the first one I ever went to was the Conservative Conference in Blackpool in 1997, when I was still a student. And then David Cameron, it was under David Cameron's leadership that they decided to go towards the city venues in the kind of late 2000s, towards Manchester and Birmingham. And I think part of it was David Cameron wanting to change the Conservative Party's brand and move away from these, you know, twee traditional venues to being more urban and metropolitan, which I fear put off some of the older Tory party members. I dare say many older Tory party members probably actually quite enjoyed going to the seaside venues and going to a no-frills B&B that was pretty affordable. And it was what they were used to, and you know, certainly I think a lot have been put off by the idea of going to a city where the sense is that the accommodation will be a lot more expensive and the atmosphere will be very different. Although at the same time, you know, those city venues are not at all something that will put off the kind of more corporate types, and you know, certainly in terms of the kind of demographic of the number of people attending the conference, you know, that I think there's a far bigger chunk of, you know, corporate attendees, businesses, lobbyists today than there would have been, you know, 20 years ago, you know, which has changed the nature of the conference. It's changed the nature of a lot of the fringe meetings, which are on very niche corporate issues, where basically the room is full of lobbyists for, you know, different businesses within that area rather than party members who've got an interest in that particular domain.
Do we need a physical conference? I mean, one criticism, I spoke to somebody this week about it, and they said it's an opportunity for lobbyists to meet people who they could have met in London. Caroline, what do you think you know, is there a need for a physical presence?
Yes, and once again, I'm totally coming from the sort of angle of membership and not coming from the angle of how policy is made and how governments set their priorities. So from the angle of membership, I can honestly attest to the sort of, you know, excitement as conference month approached. And just sort of local activists, you know, talking excitedly about the conference was coming up. It was great fun. As Jonathan, I think, would say, huge opportunity for members to meet each other and build networks. But honestly, the social element, I think, is just enormously important. Opportunities for young people to meet each other. And honestly, where I come from, Hammersmith and Fulham, lots of older Tories. And you know what struck me was they weren't particularly political. I was always astonished to meet people in the Conservative Party who weren't political. And you could sort of tell that, you know, 20, 30 years ago, they'd joined the Conservative Party because there were people like them and it was very social. And actually, people so much need that, don't they? Opportunities to meet each other. So I think the importance of conference is, if anything, greater than it ever was before. Opportunities for people to meet.
I agree, it's a very social occasion, and a lot of people who go to the party conference will not actually step foot in the main conference hall where the ministers and the politicians are speaking. It's about what happens at the fringe meetings and in the bars and at the social events and the receptions. And you know, a lot of, you know, you'll get a lot of people from corporate world who go to conference and will try and fill their diary up with meetings, as you say, with people who they could be meeting back in London, where most of them are based all the time. I mean, there's a sense that you can meet a politician, certainly a minister, without the civil service entourage, which you would probably have in London, which may be advantageous on both sides. But for the most part, you know, I've always taken the view in the various roles I've done, you know, both as a journalist and in think tank world, that filling your diary with meetings isn't a very sensible thing to do in advance. It's far better to see who you bump into, you know, renew old friendships, make new friendships and contacts, and which can then, you know, relationships can bloom, you know, professionally thereafter. And you know, that's one of the things that I have hugely missed about there not being physical party conferences this year, that, you know, those people that you know might just only bump into once a year at the conference, you haven't been able to touch base with them. You know, and to say those personal relationships are very important. And you know, even you know, in the current COVID context, the way those of us in think tank world and journalism doing our job has changed, because you know you're not wandering around Westminster bumping into people all the time because fewer people are around, and it changes the way we're working. But that's probably a debate for another day.
Something about, yes, the importance of conference. So as a local councillor, I must have over the years literally knocked on thousands of doors and spoken to thousands of people. Many of them people in social housing, and so often on the doorstep, people would, you know, just regard politics as so remote. You know, we're a democracy sort of only in name. You know, we get to vote very occasionally. And I would just feel so sad. I would sort of want to say, gosh, if only more people were involved in the parties. I would like to have been able to tell them that, you know, if you go to the Conservative Party conference, seriously, every day you bump into Conservative MPs and ministers in bars and after sessions, and you can walk up to them and you can sort of nobble them for 5 minutes. And, you know, they'll listen to you seriously. And it's actually very egalitarian. And, you know, you realise that you can actually, any person in this country who wants to can join a political party. And, you know, I don't want to pretend they're particularly close to policy all the time, but, you know, they can be so close to politicians and they can so easily involve themselves in the political process and the policy-making process. And conference is just a great opportunity for people to see that in action and to see hundreds of activists, hundreds of young people and old people talking to MPs just as equals in bars after meetings. And that's so important for the functioning of our democracy.
But it's interesting what you say about, you know, we're not pretending that the you know, you can kind of, you're a part of the policy formation process by being a Tory party member who goes to the party conference. Of course, that's one of the big differences between the different political parties, because the Liberal Democrats, still, for them, their party conference is the body that makes the policy of the party, and they have a conference in the autumn and the spring, both of which, you know, hold debates and hold votes, where, you know, policies are decided which define the what that party does. The Labour Party used to do that, although effectively the Blair reforms diluted that, and there's now a national policy forum, but the idea that you can have a vote at conference that defines Labour policies is now not really there, whereas the Conservative Party has never really done this. I mean, up until 99 or 2000, you had this veneer of democracy because you would have these so-called debates at the party conference where there'd be a kind of motion congratulating the Conservative leader on doing something or other in some particular area of policy. And, you know, there'd be a vote to endorse this motion, which no one would ever oppose because it wasn't actually saying anything. But then even that, the veneer of debate was then abolished around the turn of the century. And so that the conference floor just became a showcase for the politicians to make speeches, and those who the party hierarchy wanted to give a platform to, either among potential candidates or people from business or the charitable sector who they wanted to promote in some way.
Can I ask you, Jonathan? So one thing I thought I noticed and wasn't sure was 12 years ago was the day, you know, some complete ordinary person would suddenly be up there in front of the whole conference. And for example, that's how Catherine Birbalsing, she was just a sort of, I mean, it changed her life to step up on the platform at the heart of the Conservative Party conference. So Catherine Birbalsing is the headmistress of Michaela School, and it's a very, very traditional school. And it only came about through the Free Schools movement and through Michael Gove. And I think the Conservatives were just sleeping, and all of a sudden, here was this woman, a black woman, up on stage at the centre of the Conservative Party conference, saying, we absolutely want traditional values being taught in our schools. You know, you are meant to be the traditional values party. You're asleep.
I mean, she would have got to have done that, because someone would have thought, oh, here's someone interesting who's sympathetic to us, who we can put on the stage and give that platform to.
But my question is, the last two times I went, nothing I mean, fresh. Am I wrong there?
I mean, no, they still have been putting quite a lot of external speakers onto the platform, you know, who are, you know, in their view, pushing interesting ideas. Back in the day, when you had this veneer of debate, party members would put in a slip to the speaker's table to try and intervene in the debate. And, you know, famously in 1977, William Hague, aged 16, put in his slip and got to go up and do his 2 or 3 minutes, which gave him infamy. But again, over time, it became very much a case of, you know, screening who they wanted to give that platform to. And even if you put a slip in, you know, if you weren't favoured by the party hierarchy, then you were unlikely to get a say.
But you seem to be, like, I get the impression that you're saying there used to be a veneer, now there's nothing. Are you suggesting we should go back to involving members more in policy making, much more directly?
I think it's a good and healthy thing for political parties, any political party, to have internal debate about its direction. And, you know, if you join a political party, then surely it's because you, you know, believe in its values and want to influence the direction in which it goes.
I mean, honestly, since I've been involved, which is probably just 15 years, literally, I think by the time I turned up, I understood there was no opportunity to influence policy. I mean, that's pretty tragic, isn't it? So if there was a way back to robustly involving the membership in policy debate, I mean, honestly, where is it? I see policy being made as at focus groups now. I don't really know. Why on the front page of the Times yesterday was it all about wind farms in the middle of a coronavirus crisis?
Well, because that's the line that the Prime Minister's press people briefed out to the media as the message they wanted on the front pages.
Yeah, but where did that come from? Who thought that that would sort of have the country going great, you know, in the middle of the coronavirus? Reading about wind farms on the front page of the Times is going to make me vote Conservative next time.
Do you think then
around.
If there was more of a link between the Conservative Party members, if they had more of a say in policy direction, that the government now would be more in touch with what people wanted and kind of less of these arbitrary rules on coronavirus? And
yeah, really, I do.
Do you agree with that, Jonathan?
As I say, I think any party members trying to have more influence over their party's policy direction is a healthy thing and a good thing. And say, looking at the Conservative Party in particular, there do seem few opportunities for party members to have that say. No, but then at the same time, you know, there is a vibrant world of think tanks out there. Obviously, I'm now director of Politair as a think tank, which is producing policy ideas and, you know, hosting events where people can get involved in discussing the kind of ideas and policy directions that they want public policy to go in. And, you know, if the Conservative Party isn't willing to provide its members with a forum for doing so, then obviously others can fill that niche.
One of the things about the virtual conference that, I don't know if it's still going on, it's just finished at least, that I noticed was there was no spontaneity, there was no chance of anything interesting to happen. And conferences have been used in the past, by politicians quite skillfully to be able to promote themselves. You know, you think of David Cameron in 2005 when he delivered his speech without notes, and, you know, all the journalists there that are hungry to write something interesting that's not just, you know, a kind of what the party want them to write. That propelled him forward in a way, and he springboarded himself off conference to be able to win the leadership. Can you think of any other notable events where things have changed in a way that the party haven't stage managed?
Well, I mean, by people delivering speeches via YouTube, you get absolutely no audience reactions. There's no sense of how the membership are feeling.
And Boris Johnson told us how what would have happened in a virtual conference. He would have had cheers, wouldn't he?
Indeed, and it's interesting that, you know, his style is very much aimed at exciting an audience to get a reaction, and, you know, delivering that kind of speech, you know, just down the barrel of a camera without any reaction is very odd. And say it, there's no ability for an audience to react and to show, you know, for then observers to gauge how the party is feeling, and the lack of the physical conference has just, you know, robbed journalists of the opportunity to take the temperature of the party and just get a sense of, you know, where things are. I mean, No, people have kind of historically thought of the Conservative Party as, you know, very old and fuddy-duddy. And actually, one of the things I've noted talking to journalists over recent years is their sense of surprise when they attend the Conservative Party conference at how many young people are actually there. And actually, you know, there generally has been quite a youthful feel to it in recent years. And the opportunity for, you know, those fringe meetings where, you know, you will get interventions, you know, from left side that, you know, suddenly become a news story. You know, that just obviously hasn't happened this year.
And there's no opportunity as well for Boris Johnson to upstage the leader's speech. Well, partly because he is the leader now, but there's no sense in which he can, you know, in a physical place, he would come and he would make an appearance and be mobbed by activists, and he would destroy all the good headlines that David Cameron.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this year is an exception. Mm. So, I mean, I think what you said before was, you know, how it more normally is that, like, if we say now, who is the next leader of the Conservative Party, or who's going to be the leader in 10 years' time? And it's exactly at conference that some MP that you've never heard of is suddenly wowing everybody. And again, I agree, it's a great opportunity for, you know, other MPs to sort of get up and wow everybody. And I think that's a great, I mean, you're right to say it's a great opportunity for MPs to appeal to activists and say, I'm here and I'm good and please follow me.
But it's also, I guess, a huge opportunity to make mistakes. You know, you think of the 2017 Theresa May's conference speech where almost everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. I mean, do you think that's bad for the party that these things can happen? Or do you think
no, because, I mean, you know, exactly, the party's a great opportunity to sort of just put aside the stage managing and the PR and all that carefully managed stuff. And at the end of the day, you know, we want MPs that are actually real people with good ideas.
Mm.
So, you know, that was actually a good thing to happen, to be revealed.
Theresa May's conference
speech.
Yeah,
to say, look, come on, Conservatives. We can't do this. We can't run a party like this where we sort of stage manage a persona.
Mm.
We have to have real people up there who are highly intelligent, understand policy, can connect to people, and can run a country. Mm. And, you know, I guess the conference exposes who can and who can't do that.
Mm. Jonathan, your experience going to other conferences, you've been to Labour Conference and UKIP and
Lib Dems. Yeah.
What, you know, is there anything distinct about the Conservative Party conference?
I mean, I suppose I always found Conservative conference the most fun, and I think, you know, the Conservative Party does know how to party, frankly. The Lib Dem, you know, there were a number of years where I went to all three conferences, Lib Dem, Labour, Tory, in that order. And the Lib Dems was always kind of a bit of a warm-up, you know, because there is a community of, you know, people in journalism and think tanks, you know, in public affairs who will go to all three. And, yeah, so Lib Dems was always a bit of a warm-up for the conference season. The Lib Dems, say, because it's a serious policy-making conference, it's a very earnest gathering in that sense. And then the Labour conference was then the middle week, and then you have the Tories at the end. See, the nature of the Labour Party conference changed over the years. In the Blair era, you'd have the corporate exhibition full of, you know, corporate stands, you know, people, you know, companies that are paid, you know, five-figure sums to, you know, be there and advertise their wares, whereas, you know, in the Corbyn era, it almost had the feeling of a kind of freshers' fair at a left-wing university rather than the traditional Labour Party conference. Then, of course, you know, those business stands bring in money. And, I mean, arguably, you know, some say the only reason the Conservative Party have continued holding their annual conference is that it's a reason, it makes money. You know, they make money from selling all those corporate stands and from the exhibition space and so on. Which obviously this year they haven't been able to do, even though I think they were trying to persuade businesses to pay a lot of money to have a virtual stand. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not quite sure how successful that attempt was.
But don't you see that's contributing to the sort of aridity of our sort of national politics, that so few people are engaged? I mean, if you're saying even the Conservatives sort of considered not, you know, only holding the conference as a sort of money-making exercise, and yet...
The comparison I'd make, I suppose, is the fact the Conservative Party technically do have a spring conference. They call it the Spring Forum, which they don't make any money on. And in recent years, they've made it as small as possible. They've usually held it in London or a town in the southeast near London.
What's it even for?
And it lasts an afternoon, and it's basically... an opportunity for the Prime Minister to speak for 20 minutes to, you know, party members who are generally association chairmen. They didn't even seem to be a sense in recent years of trying to open it out to a particularly large...
Well, you know,
base.
I just think for our democracy, you know, we absolutely need a way of re-engaging. I think you must know, was it how many, 20, 30 years ago, you know, the Conservative Party, the Labour Party were mass membership organisations.
Well, because the Labour Party
is.
I mean, that, you know, whatever people think about Jeremy Corbyn, you know, he did bring in, you know, several hundred thousand new members to the Labour Party. You know, whether they will stay there now that he's no longer the leader remains to be seen. But in terms of pure, you know, people paying a subscription to a party, Labour did have a massive resurgence under Corbyn. The Conservative Party has, I mean, I remember when William Hague inherited the leadership back in the late 90s, and the membership was supposedly about 400,000, and he set an ambition of having 1 million members for the millennium. Well, I'm afraid, well, one thing is they realised that half their members were double counted because they were members in two different places and double counted. And then, you know, over time, you know, membership fell. I think it has gone up a little bit in recent years, but, you know, absolutely you're right. You know, the days of a mass membership are over, which again, you know, creates a debate about how local parties and local MPs or candidates then function, whether they have to build up their own body of supporters kind of separate from a party membership.
Well, I can tell you that they struggle to function, you know, struggle to find people to come out and talk on doorsteps and hand out leaflets, and you know, I just see disengagement in the democratic process, and that's not healthy. And because this is about the conference is a great way, I think, a great opportunity to re-excite people, to tell people there's something really fun to attend. And the Conservatives should try and re-energize the conference as a fun event, an element of involvement in policy, and something that people should come to.
And a final question for you both before we run out of time. Did either of you watch or listen to any of the virtual conference events?
Yes, I mean, I sat down and watched the Boris Johnson speech live on YouTube yesterday, as we're speaking. Which, you know, it was bereft of atmosphere, obviously, because it was him speaking straight to the bow of a camera, trying to give a speech that would rouse the masses when there were no physical masses to rouse.
You weren't logged into the actual conference, were you? Were you just watching it on, you're streaming it on YouTube?
Yeah, I streamed it on YouTube, yes.
Because they actually, they did a fake, in the actual conference, if you logged in, they did a fake kind of spectator, this fake auditorium with fake people watching, and it just looked a bit quite odd, and obviously nobody moved in front of you.
Regrettably, I missed that.
Did you, Caroline, watch any of the...
So my husband, who's also a Conservative, was watching a session, and he just called me over to have a look, and there were 9 people watching. And I mean, honestly, I think it's completely understandable. I just think it was what it was, and we move forward. So no, I didn't watch anything else after that. I just thought the whole thing was tragic, but, you know, we move forward, and we look forward to a fantastically fun conference next year.
Well, Caroline and Jonathan, thank you very much for joining me on the Critic Podcast.
If you've enjoyed listening to The Critic Podcast, why not subscribe to have the magazine delivered to your door? Subscribe today with the offer of 3 issues for just £5 by heading to our website, www.thecritic.co.uk.